Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast, the place to be for drama teachers, drama students, and theater educators everywhere. I'm Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 151. You can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode151. All right, so today we're looking back. We're reflecting. Reflection, the great buzzword of education in the 21st century. Everybody walk across the room. Okay, everybody reflect on the experience. Oh, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I use reflection all the time in our educational materials. I think it's important. It's key to comprehension and connection. Good C words. So we're going to reflect, and we're going to reflect on theater school. We're going to look back on going to theater school 20 years after the fact with Jesse Wilson. So he was accepted into Juilliard, and one might think that alone would be a one-way ticket to a professional theater life, because going to Juilliard is a dream for many theater students. When I think of, you know, theater school, you know, that's the name at the top of my list. But as we all know, dreams are different than reality, in good and bad ways, right? There's a little teaser for you. You have to listen for good and bad. Dun, dun, dun. Okay, let's get to it. Hello, everybody. All right, I am speaking with Jesse Wilson. Hello, Jesse.
What's up, Lindsay?
Oh, everything is up. Everything is up. Nothing is down. Actually, everything is up and everything is down, which means we're all in a good place.
That's great.
Something like that.
Isn't that like a Shel Silverstein or something? Mm-hmm. Everything is up, everything is down, something like that. I don't know.
I like that. I think that's wonderful.
If not, it's something it should be written. I love it.
It's a good point of view, and we'll say it. We'll give the credit to Shel Silverstein.
Yeah.
So, Jesse, you and I talked last year about a wonderful project that you sort of got involved in with theater in prisons.
Yes.
And we also got a little bit into your beginnings and how where you are is probably not where you expected when you first started out in your theater career.
Not at all.
And that's kind of what we're talking about this month. On the podcast, we are talking about, what happens about your expectations of going into a theater program and what you think your theater life is going to be and maybe how you can maybe temper some of those expectations. Or have a strategy, right? Have a sort of a strategy for hitting the real world. So I think that's it in a nutshell. Let's go back, way back, and just talk about your beginnings. You grew up in LA.
I did.
And what was that like?
Born and raised.
You're one of the 20, right?
I think so. Yeah, I was born and raised in Hollywood, California, about 5 minutes away from the Hollywood sign. You could look outside my bedroom window, and I saw a very clear view of the Dodger Stadium way in the distance. And then to my left, there was the Hollywood sign. And I lived in this wonderful little bubble world in the Hollywood Hills that gave the illusion kind of like of living in the country. And so you had a it was an interesting contrast between that sort of hidden, ensconced world of the hills and then the grime of LA.
You know, it's so funny because when we think of, maybe not so much now, but I know when I was growing up, for sure, is that notion of the Hollywood sign and its symbolism for this life.
This
not theater life, but this movie life. And did that ever hit you?
That's right. Well, you know, it's great that you said that, because to perpetuate the metaphor of the sign, the symbolism, is that, yeah, absolutely. From a distance, it's this shiny, iconographic beacon to all artists and performers come to Hollywood, and it's, you know, it's the Mecca, and it's all that it represents. And of course, you go up to it. I don't know if you've ever been up to this sign, but it is filthy. I mean, there's graffiti all over it and urine and, you know, needles. And now they might have cleaned it up a little bit since I was there last. But to me, that's such a divine metaphor of this business. Not to sound cynical, but from a distance, it looks amazing, doesn't it? You get up close and it's like, wow, you know, it's a whole different experience.
You know what, though? I think that for the arts in general, I mean, you have to get past the cynicism. But I think that is a metaphor for the arts life in general. When
you bet.
When you look at it from a distance, whether it be a movie career or a writing career or a acting career in theater,
yes.
It really does look like this wonderful, awesome life. And when you get up close, I think you can choose your path. You can choose the path where you get very bitter about it, or you can choose the path where it's like, hell, this is a lot of work.
Well, sure, absolutely. And, you know, listen, you have to have the carrot dangling in front of you. I mean, if you learned, maybe it would be helpful, who knows, but, you know, if I learned the realities, the true realities and the nature of the industry or the dark side of the arts at an early age, you know, who knows? Maybe I would have said, well, screw it. You know, I'm going to be a flute player. But even then, of course, there's probably some challenges. But, you know, so you have to be enticed. And because it is enticing, it's wonderful. And when you're growing up, it's, you know, you've got the image, the stars and the silver screen and the cinema. And of course, it looks wonderful. Who wouldn't want to be a part of that world? So I think the question then becomes, how do you balance the realities with the fantasy?
Yeah. And what happens? And some people do quite well and some people don't.
Yes.
So when did you first start down your path in terms of an arts career?
I would say the moment I slid out of the womb.
So out you come, and there's a camera, and Jesse went, hey.
Put it on and let's go, kid. Honestly, I can't remember ever not acting. I grew up in the industry, my family.
Okay, so let's talk
writers, producers, you know, my earliest memories are of Academy Award winning, the parties at our house, and so all my family's friends were involved in the industry. And so, you know, I was on stage, gosh, I don't know, 5 or 6. And I think I was just always acting.
So what was it like? But and when you're so your first steps are in you're still in the Hollywood signs in a distance phase, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And what was were you in theater? Did you do commercials? Did you do?
Yeah. Theater and commercials sort of went hand in hand, but I don't think I was ever not in a play at least 4 or 5 times a year. And that started, this is of course, when arts and education was just the expectation. Every school had theater programs, and now it's like, what? You have a theater program? Really? That's amazing. You know, in Los Feliz Elementary, that was when I was just starting to do theater. And my first play, I remember it, I was in the second grade. It was a Japanese play called Momotaro, and I played Momotaro, and I was the lead, and it was awesome. And my family, my mom would come and pick us up. My brother and I were both involved in doing a lot of commercial work, and she'd pick us up from school. We'd do the normal audition stuff, and we would do our commercials, and then we would have school on the set, and that was just a normal sort of way of life.
That's interesting you say that was your normal.
That was the norm. It was.
What made you choose, because you went to Juilliard?
Yeah.
And what informed that decision?
Honestly, there really wasn't any thought.
It's the best, right? It's the,
well, I guess.
The notion. The
I
notion
don't know.
Of.
I mean, I can only share my experience, but there, I'd love to say in hindsight, you know, I really carefully considered what would be the best for my training. And the reality was I was the worst high school student ever. In fact, I barely graduated high school. I had like the lowest GPA, and my school counselor even bet me, honestly, $40. He said, if you, which, you know, it's pretty big for, you know, a high school kid, I'll bet you $40 if you graduate. And, so, you know, I took the bet and I graduated. But so the opportunity to audition for Juilliard honestly was the most appealing thing, not because I was thinking necessarily in terms of elevating my career as an actor at that point, but that was really the only school I thought I could get into because the academics weren't required. Mm-hmm. And so I went for it, and it was a real gamble because that was the only school that I auditioned for. Otherwise, I think I had plans. I was really into Jack Kerouac at the time, and I thought, well, okay, if I don't get into Juilliard, man, screw it. I'll be a fire watcher up in Oregon or something like that. It was from one of his books called The Dharma Bums. And I thought I'm going to write the great American novel in a shack somewhere if I don't get into Juilliard. Well, it turned out that never happened. And so I got into Juilliard and yeah.
So what was, okay. So what was your, so there's something at stake here. So one would assume that you, or maybe not, you can tell. So what did you do to prepare for this, to get it for your audition?
So I did, they had you do, so it took place in San Francisco, and I had two monologues I had to prepare for, one classical, one contemporary. I mean, it's the standard audition stuff. I don't think, and maybe they've changed since then, but I think it's pretty much the standard audition process you go through any major performing arts school, with the one exception. So once I auditioned and I did the monologues, then they have you go through a callback, of course, if they want you for a callback. And that's when the fun began, because there was a long table of four very scary looking old men staring down at me. And they had me, they conducted a series of intense improvisations. I was like, what the hell is this? And this went on for, I don't know, maybe a half hour of just this role-playing stuff and putting me in these situations and throwing the stuff at me. And it was fun and scary at the same time. So it was like the monologue stuff was the door opener, and then the real test was seeing how I would handle their improvisational scenarios.
Did you have improv in high school?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I loved improv. Yeah, I had a great, I went to LACSA, LA County High School for the Arts, and actually where I'm going to be performing full circle next, this year.
Sometime in the near future.
I'm trying to remember,
this is March, right? Or past.
Yeah, so we had a great teacher named David Schwartz, this improv teacher, and I think he's still doing it. He was phenomenal, and this guy is just like, every time you go into class, it was like, what is the show? Whose Line Is It Anyway? So I learned so many things. So I really learned how to think on my feet at a very, very early age, and so that was cool, except for the scary world of you know, it now became different because it was an audition at San Francisco in front of four very scary old men. But I felt definitely right at home with the improv stuff.
I was going to say, was this, so I just have this image of four cantankerous white guys, you and improv. Like, there wasn't even other people you got to improv with. It was just
no,
you.
No, yeah, it was me. It was that's exactly right. It was that's funny. Now when I said, now I think about it, it was just me. It wasn't like, all right, let's throw that in. Let's throw the monkey in with Jesse and see how he handles it. No, it was me talking to a chair, me in a trapped elevator, say I love you three different ways to a non-existent character, well, a character that you're making real for you. But yeah, it was all me.
I am still stuck on this because it's just funny because when you think about it is symbolism. And I think about Juilliard and I think about it as this height of heights, rightly or wrongly. Hollywood sign, great symbol, rightly or wrongly.
Yeah.
And we and that the thing that's going to make you a good actor is a couple of monologues and talking to a chair. And I'm not and but as you say, thinking on your feet, and maybe that is a really, you know, maybe.
Oh, I did sing a song, you know? Too. I forgot about that. There was a song that I needed to sing.
Okay, yeah. So you get into Juilliard. What are your expectations of this institution? What do you think is going to happen before you go?
Talk about being ill-prepared. Let me just say I'm so grateful, unbelievably grateful that I went there, but I had no idea what it was going to be like. And to nobody's fault, of course. But honestly, even if I'd done the research, I don't know if it would have really prepared me. Here's this young, cocky, long-haired, 18-year-old kid. Acting is completely, you know, it's like breathing. It's what we do, and that's who I am. And
it's thinking, your norm.
It's my norm, yeah. So, you know, I'm just going to sort of waltz into this Marlon Brando fantasy that I've been, you know, harboring since time began, and I'll just become more of that. And it's just, you know, nothing was real. And then, wham! It was like theater boot camp. Yeah. Sir, yes, sir. And if you're late for class, see ya. Now, I've heard that Juilliard I'm actually in contact with that school quite a bit now. And people who have graduated and people who are there, and I talk to faculty members. So I have a wonderful relationship with them now, but the climate has changed, I know, considerably since I was there. I think it's still strict and regimented, probably one of the more regimented schools, but I think there's another side to it that, let's just say, I didn't exactly experience when I was there. It was very, very tough. And the foundation of the school is hardcore classical theater. Not that I hadn't done that before, but the training that one had to commit to if you wanted to survive there was intense. And that first 2 years, I'd love to say that it was, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, here I'm in acting school and the most famous school. It was, I really seriously fought it, just staying in there, just staying alive. And I had a very, very tough time. You can say I was disillusioned. I don't know what other word would sum it up, but it was, yeah, I got my butt handed to me there.
Okay. So this is a great point because a lot of our listeners are going to have students who are choosing schools to go to, or yeah. They themselves are choosing schools to go to.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about in that position, how do you prepare yourself for, if you're going to an acting school, you know, what are some things that you can do so that you don't end up disillusioned like that?
That is a great question. Well, let's go back a little bit further. It was a nationwide survey, and I think it was 71 to about 80%, which is a pretty big number of college graduates. And when I say college graduates, I mean students in performing arts schools, in Ivy League schools, and whatever. College students, college graduates said that they would have done something different while in college to prepare for entering the quote unquote real world. And what that something that was different looked like something that actually really wasn't taught while they were in school. And preparing for, I mean, obviously, since we're talking about performing arts, I think you need to think, if it's at all possible, and it's very, very difficult to do when you're in the throes of adolescence, it's very difficult to prepare yourself for the bigger picture beyond just what am I going to get out of that school. It's mm-hmm. almost like you have to think about the school beyond the school, and that's the school of life. And it'd be wonderful if...
What a hard thing, eh? Because what 17-year-old is going, well, in 10 years, I'm going to
be... Exactly. You throw out the word life skills to a high school student and you'll get a finger in your face, or, you know, a polite nod and it'll just be like white noise. I mean, if you would have told me about life skills and preparing for the real world, then I wouldn't have, it wouldn't have had any impact on me. So the question then becomes, how do you meet students on the level of where they're at and allow them to see, and I use this word, it's a very interesting word, and that's the word of role, allow them themselves to see their role beyond just becoming a better actor or a performer. In other words, mm-hmm. there's implications beyond just, hey, I'm going to be a star. Hey, I'm going to get the great agent. Hey, I'm going to get, you know, and yeah, there's something to be said about making art for art's sake. And that's fantastic. That's wonderful. Unfortunately, unless you are a trust fund baby or you've been told you'll never have to worry about the realities of life, I think that applies maybe to 1% of people on this planet. You've got to be prepared for the great big stage of life beyond the school.
I wonder if, like, then the thing that needs to happen is that a student, a 17-year-old who's looking at this school, who needs to look at, who also needs to look at after that, needs to talk to a third year or a fourth year college person and say, are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready for life? Like, who's going to ask that? But like, so you don't. Because I think that's the problem, too, is that it's that, you know what, this is so hilarious that I just keep coming back to that Hollywood sign, because it's about symbols. Well, it's about symbols, and then it's about when you get up close to them, they're just not what think they are. And then have to make a choice about how you're going to deal with that. And I think college is exactly like that. And Juilliard is one thing. My college experience was exactly like that.
Yep.
We think it's going to be one thing, and the reality of the situation is that it's probably completely different. And then tack on that, okay, you have this college experience, now you're going to go do life and you don't know how to do your taxes.
Well, absolutely. And this, you know, this is an argument that I've been making for a long time, Lindsay, and this is why I'm so involved in arts and education, because I think a paradigm shift absolutely needs to be made. And I will say it is being made in small ways, I'm seeing that in the schools that I'm working with, but it really, I think the stage needs to be set, so to speak, before the student goes off into that performing arts school, and I think it has to do it, you know, at a lot earlier. And what I'm getting at is, I think if students were to really, really see that the arts, the role of the arts, were way more than just what they initially might have thought it was when they were younger. In other words, the Hollywood sign. If they knew that there was more to the arts than just being on, getting an Emmy Award or the Academy Award, which is all fantastic stuff, trust me, and I'm not downplaying any of that stuff. I think it's great to have that. But if they knew that the implications of the arts went beyond just entertainment, I think that the choices that students would make before they transition into college would be much more intentional and much more thoughtful. And it would be backed up with a real feeling of, hey, you know, I can contribute something to this. And yeah, one could say, well, you're young, you're adolescent. But I think, you know, anybody is teachable. And it really depends upon what you are feeding a student and how you're doing it in an exciting and inspiring way that isn't just, well, now let's roll up our sleeves and talk about the real world, because that then you've just got one big giant yawn fest, you know.
And then from what, building on what you're talking about, we're talking about what does theater mean in a high school context, and
you
now
bet.
You're talking about the thing that administrators always poo-poo. It's like, well, it's just games and you're just putting on plays. It's like, no, what if we're preparing for the role of the arts, the role of arts in life?
Abso-frickin-lutely. You just hit it on the head. And this goes back to my experience working with inmates. Over 20 years later, after graduating from Juilliard, how ironic is it that I really understood the transformational nature of the arts when I was in a non- quote-unquote art environment, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what if I had that knowledge or that experience earlier? Who's to say?
I know.
Who's
it's,
to say?
It's the same here, because I spent 10 years desperately trying to be the quote unquote, air quotes, as big as your face playwright, and trying to be the playwright in the city who got the productions, who did this, who was this. And the devastation when it's not happening and thinking that that made me a failure.
Yes.
Which was absolutely of no truth or validity at all.
Yeah, you bet.
And what if I figured that out? You know, when I wasn't looking at sparkly signs and sparkly lights.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. You're right. And the artistry of the teaching becomes, and how do you blend the head knowledge, the practicalities of relationships and art and commerce and the fear of rejection and all that stuff? How do you get that in a student's mind, at least so that at least you have some awareness before they're off and running? And how do you merge that in with something that they're really, really excited about? Yeah. You know, it's tough. But I mean, there are wonderful teachers out there, mm-hmm. and there is wonderful curriculum that allows students to be able to connect the dots while they're doing something that feeds their heart. And that's what I'm all about.
Yeah.
I mean, I think when you've got that blend there, then, whatever a student decides to do after that, at least they've been given this information. At least they've had something to really kind of sink their teeth into before they're graduating. And then, you know, 20 years later in therapy and disillusionment and all the other great stuff.
We're saving therapy bills across this great nation.
Yeah, exactly. Right. This is our contribution. Yeah.
Okay. So let's just.
Well, and it also goes back to this. You know, I when I was younger, I thought, and this is I'm no exception to, I think, probably the millions of other young, cocky artists out there, that one had to be, the struggling, depressed, you know, narcissistic,
the arts come from pain.
Artist. And I don't think you have to, I don't think you have to live an unhealthy life to create wonderful work. I would have made the argument against that, but I really don't. I think it's just the opposite.
Okay. So let's just take you back to you got through Juilliard.
Yeah.
And stepped out into the real world and
whammo.
What was that like? just to give a picture for everybody.
Yeah. Gosh, what would be we've got a wonderful metaphor for the Hollywood sign. geez, I don't know. I'm trying to think if you could come up with an image that conveys being body slammed. That would be maybe an enormous wrestler throwing me on the mat, and the wrestler has a shirt that says life on it. That's the first thing I could think of.
We'll go with that one. That's good.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Great. Great. Giant angry wrestler guy. I was totally unprepared for the quote unquote real world. The bubble was burst. All my expectations just were totally shattered. Learning how to make a living and all this stuff just was a real struggle.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah. And then finding and maintaining my voice as an artist, where is Jesse in this world? And looking back, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to use all this stuff. And I've put all this searching and the finding of one's identity into a production that I've created and that I'm sharing with performing arts schools right now as a sort of a way of kind of, giving back and also helping kind of clarifying a lot of the confusion that I felt back then. And, you know, I'm able to use a lot of that confusion, fortunately, in a way that works and sort of feeds me artistically. But at the time, I didn't see any artistry in the floundering and in the misery and the pain and all that stuff. Not to say that all of that would have been avoided anyway, because, you know, when you're in your early 20s, you know, pain is just, and confusion is just sort of a given. However, I think had I had some tools to be able to navigate the waters with, life would have been infinitely easier.
Well, it's so interesting, eh? Because, like, you know, there is that intensity of college life where it is all about the art, and whether it's classical theater or playwriting or musicals, whatever, it's about how everything is focused on making that the best that it can possibly be, and, you know, and making you a machine at it. But that doesn't help you land an audition. That doesn't help you keep up with your rent. That doesn't help you maintaining your artistic life, who is Jesse, while you're trying to make your rent.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because when we see, because unfortunately what our students see is they see Broadway, and they see, there we go, shiny lights. They see that what one outcome of a study experience is. And the reality is there's so many, and then there are so many people who never make it to those shiny lights. I have a very vivid memory of premiering a play in a high school, a musical in a high school. And the first thing one of the kids said to me is like, you know, when you take this to Broadway, we're ready. We're there for you. And it's like, oh, honey.
Yeah.
No.
Well, absolutely. And here's where the paradigm shift needs to be made. As hard as it is to grasp when you're young and you want to make a living and you know, the reward in this business has got to be more than the Hollywood sign. It has got to be more than the bright, shiny, naked metal man in your hand for Academy Awards. It has to be. And I think the real theater teachers, the Stella Adlers and the Lee Strasbergs and the Sadie Meisners, they were all about helping students come to the awareness that life was infinitely more rich and rewarding than the immediate award of you got the job, as much as you want the job, as much as obviously you need the job to pay the rent. The minute that becomes more important than your purpose, than your contribution, and I'm not saying you've got to be a Mahatma Gandhi when you graduate school, but I think you need to think about what the role of the arts serve, or how they serve and why they serve and why they're on this planet beyond just, you know, I got a part on daytime television. And when you do that, I absolutely believe that you eliminate a lot of that need for what you were just talking about, Lindsay, which is that exterior validation, that if I don't get this part, I'm nothing. If I don't get that accolade, if I don't get that nod, and then what you do with that mentality or that fixed mindset is that you now start living your life constantly where your affirmation as a human being or confirmation as a human being is determined upon other people. And when you do that, you're just, I mean, and I've seen it. You've probably seen it. You're setting yourself up for tons of misery and the fear of rejection and all that stuff. And then before you know it, that voice inside you, it becomes eroded. It does. It goes away. It shouldn't have to be that way.
No. Okay. So as we wrap up here, and I'll just point out that we're going to put the show that you are doing, which is called Face the City. I'm going to say it and not mumble it. We'll put you'll put your information on that in the show notes, so that if anyone wants to learn more about that, they can. And as we wrap up here, so I think we've talked a lot. I think we've talked a lot about this whole notion of what you think is going to be out there for you when you choose a school program and when you think about the real world. So if you had to give, like, you know, three tips for our folks listening about what they can tell their students about what they should look for or questions they should ask for facing the real world. Am I making any sense? I feel I got to the end of that sentence and went, perfect. Yeah, I'm going to stop talking.
You're having a dialogue about...
I'm having a dialogue with myself.
It goes back to the question, why do you want to go to the school? And I think just start there. I mean, really have a serious conversation. Why do you want to do this? Why do you want to become a better actor? Why do you want to become a better dancer? Why do you want to cultivate your talent as a musician? Why? And I think that word why, if you really, really follow through with it, will create some insight for the student to be able to take some personal responsibility for. So, I mean, I think starting right there is why do you want to be in the school?
And I think that maybe what we need to do too is force a couple of extra whys. Why do you want to be in this school? Well, I want to be an actor. Well, why do you want to be an actor?
Yeah.
Well, because of this. Well, why? Like, I think that it's three or four, it's actually three or four whys to get to the heart of what it's going to do. And I think everyone needs to have these serious things about, these serious contemplations about it, because students these days are in debt up to their eyeballs.
Yeah.
And to choose a program and not know why and then get to the end of it and go, well, that was okay, but then what?
Absolutely. And also, I think, I don't know if it's necessarily tips, but I think it's a fresh reminder that goes back to what I think should be fundamentally in place in education before the performing arts school, which is what is the role of the arts? So you have why, and then you have the what, and then what is the role of the arts? Is it just entertainment? Can it save a life? And I think when you have those kinds of discussions, then you naturally, hopefully if it's facilitated in the right way, then you naturally have at least the beginnings of an awareness. Oh my gosh, you know, I'm a part of something a lot greater than my own ego.
And wouldn't that be a lovely thing to figure out?
That's the ideal.
That's the ideal. That's awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
Ah, Jesse, another lovely conversation.
I love it.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. I'm excited.
To go with it, could you ask for more? I think not. It's all for you. So you can catch the blog on our website, theaterfolk.com, or you can also click the link in the show notes in this episode, theaterfolk.com/151. Finally, where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk and on the Stitcher app. You can subscribe to TFP on iTunes. All you have to do is search for the word theater folk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.